Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
November 4th, 2019. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the reaction here on the ChairShot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Yo.
Unfortunately, the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, is still under the weather. We hope to have her back next Monday. All right, let's get right to the show here, Tony. Did you by any chance happen to watch any of Crown Jewel at all?
No.
Actually turned out to be a relatively decent show, Tony.
That's
I got
great.
Together with a group of friends and we watched. It was just kind of like a bros hangout kind of situation with the show. But I think the biggest topic of discussion right now is the fallout from after the show. What the fuck happened in Saudi Arabia?
Well, you know, plain shit.
For those who don't know, in case you've been living under a rock for the last 48 hours or so, as most of the WWE superstars were about to get on their plane to go home in order to try to make it back to the States in time to be at SmackDown on Buffalo the following night, which is just dumb timing, but that's different story for another time. They were ordered off of the plane, if you believe some sources, or there was mechanical failure, if you believe other sources. Either way, the vast majority of the superstars that were on said plane did not make it back home in time for that episode of SmackDown on Friday, and as a matter of fact, most of them did not make it home until Saturday evening here in the U.S., landing in not Buffalo, but instead in New York City. Tony, how much of the rumor and innuendo about this whole story do you not buy or not buy?
I feel that the easiest answer is probably the truth. They just had mechanical issues and could not get home. Not unheard of.
Yeah, but what, you think they'd have other planes on standby for just the situation?
No. Why?
Because it's a chartered flight to the United States, I would think they'd have a backup.
No. There'd be no reason for a backup. Stop falling into the hype. Nothing happened. It was an inconvenient matter that caused a really good SmackDown.
Speaking of said SmackDown, I guess that's kind of where we're going to be heading from here. And our opening discussion for SmackDown will be, I dubbed tonight's episode of the reaction, what's next? Next spelled NXT. Because they have played a major role in the last two episodes of WWE programming that wasn't even their own. Therefore, let's go to Friday Night SmackDown from Buffalo, New York, where we find out that the two announced main event matches for the show will not be happening. There will be no tag title match. There will be no Roman Reigns versus Baron Corbin. Instead, we open the show with somewhat of an announcement about the issues going on and over in Saudi Arabia and the fact that the show has been rescheduled a little bit, rearranged a bit. Amongst those rearrangings ends up being our main event for the evening, Tony, as Daniel Bryan is in the main event of SmackDown challenging for the NXT Heavyweight Championship against Adam Cole!
Baby.
Close enough. 25 minutes for Brian and Cole, and here's the biggest thing to come out of this here. Cole over clean as a whistle in the center of the ring with the last shot. You've spoken to your fondness of the black and yellow brand when you fill in on the NXT report over at 411 Mania. What was it like seeing the NXT people on SmackDown, and specifically, what was it like seeing the NXT champion treated so prominently on SmackDown, even if it wasn't an emergency fill-in situation?
I enjoyed SmackDown. A complete opposite reaction to Raw. One would think that you would have enjoyed both, but no. It was nice to see, you know, when they do the whole Raw versus SmackDown, you don't really believe it because they're so interchangeable, because there hasn't been a steady roster for years, if ever. So it never really has the same impact as what we saw on SmackDown. Now, I could dig a little deeper and question why Triple H would suddenly despise the show that his, you know, his wife is helping to run, or why he would show up on SmackDown to make a statement. And the flimsy, you know, I saw a commercial and we're not going to be looked down upon isn't all that great of an excuse. But the way that it was done on SmackDown was really, really well done, I think. So it's exciting. And it was a little bit, it was a little touch before it grew into a big thing, you know. But, you know, like Shayna showing up and making an impact. You didn't know if that was her debuting on the main roster or if it was her showing up from NXT, and then they replaced the announcer, and then you saw just more and more, and you're like, oh shit, complete 180 from Raw tonight, which was horrible. With regards to Adam Cole, yeah, he was a very prominent person there, and I think it helped everybody involved, and it didn't hurt Daniel Bryan. It was a great match, 20 minute match that just, like, I don't know, it was a lot of fun.
The thing with Adam Cole coming up here as part of the SmackDown invasion for NXT is I kind of worry that they're going to see the reaction that Cole is getting from the main roster fans, because the fans were super into the match with Bryan. They were super into the match with Seth tonight. And we'll get to Raw a little bit later on in the program. But it makes me worry that they're going to hotshot the Undisputed Era up to the main roster when clearly the Undisputed Era is needed in NXT for all the goings on and everything that circles around them over on the black and yellow brand. They kind of teased main roster stars going back to NXT. I mean, you had Finn Balor show up in NXT a couple of weeks ago. They kind of teased Seth tonight. Is there anybody in the WWE's main roster who you think would benefit the most from going down to NXT? I can think of a couple of names off the top of my head, but is there any one particular person that you think would benefit from either going to NXT or moving back to NXT?
I mean, not that they wouldn't, but I don't really care. That's not a move that I would be willing to make. Finn Balor showing up and doing his thing, that was pretty cool, but you know, you don't want to overbloat or cross-contaminate either roster. That's what's been happening to Raw and SmackDown, so they're not special or unique. So I don't feel the need to pull people down and bring people up.
All right, let's talk about the other members of NXT that got involved in the show here, and this is going to kind of take care of quick hits at the same time, because the vast majority of these segments had NXT involvement. The first of which is the announcer that you mentioned, and he'll be the first person that we discuss here, and that's Pat McAfee. McAfee replaces Aiden English after the very first match. Aiden English calls Shayna Baszler the Queen of Hearts, and then the next thing we know, we come back and McAfee's taken over. I don't think that was intentional, but it sure seemed like a punishment for Aiden English pulling him off a commentary after getting the Queen of Spades nickname wrong. How do you think McAfee did over on commentary on SmackDown?
I enjoyed the fact that he also didn't fully give away what was going on, but he kept dropping hints until the obvious was happening. I'm telling you, SmackDown from beginning to end was just well written. It was not in your face. It was not over the top, and it wasn't obvious to the point where it was annoying, like Raw. It wasn't subtle either. It was the right amount at the right time in a 2-hour span that built upon itself until you got a main event that was worthy of a main event.
Bang, 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 bang. Try and stop it. Bang, bang. Here I come. Bang.
Quick hits.
Bang.
Opening segment sees Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman announce that they're leaving SmackDown for Monday Night Raw. Rumors have it that this was actually supposed to be announced on the debut of the FS1 WWE Backstage show, but they moved it up due to the travel issues here. With Bray Wyatt over on SmackDown now, Brock going back to Raw as the champion makes sense, right? Especially given that his main current storyline is with Rey Mysterio, who is a Raw exclusive talent.
I mean, Brock Lesnar as the champion, period, doesn't make sense. But if we're going to do it,
That's really fair.
Intrigued by the Rey Mysterio challenger. I think this is the first time in a while that you're getting someone that, you know, can really sell the underdog image. You know, when you have Seth or Reigns, they're not really underdogs, no matter how many times you try to have Brock, like, demolish them, because they've done whatever they could to make them bulletproof. Rey is Rey Mysterio, so he's one of the few underdogs that people believe in and are fully capable of accepting him as an underdog. So I'm interested. And, you know, we've seen Rey go in matches where he's the little guy and everyone's the super big guy, and they've all been great. So I don't know. I'm liking that this is the first program, you know.
Somewhere Liz is breaking furniture, but I think I'm okay with it. Not to mention, we've seen proven over the course of the last couple of years, Brock works best with smaller opponents. AJ, Daniel, Seth. Compared to working with monsters like Braun or Kane, for example. Bayley defends the SmackDown Women's Championship, defeating Nikki Cross with a arm trap headlock driver. Do you like Bayley getting away from the Bayley to belly as a heel?
Sure, why not? I mean, I don't think that move was like face only, but it's always nice for a wrestler to add more to their repertoire, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing for me, is that she's actually diversifying her moveset to distinguish between her heel and her face characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the post-match attack by the Queen of Spades, Shayna Baszler. What did you think of Shayna's performance here?
She was menacing. She was everything she needed to be. And like I said, there wasn't an over-the-top message of, like, NXT's invading. It was Shayna just making a statement. And at any given time, you could have easily assumed that she was just being brought up to the main roster.
Shayna was the first of the NXT participants to show up. Matt Riddle and Keith Lee were the second and third, respectively, as they confront Sami Zayn backstage, chase him into the arena, although why Sami didn't try to dart through, well, I guess he did try to dart through the crowd, but he got caught by Riddle. And in the ring, it's Bro Derek and the second rope moonsault by the Limitless Bros. These are two guys who I actually think would do really well on the main roster, even away from the NXT Full Sail crowd. Riddle is super charismatic. Keith Lee has agility that a man his size simply should not have. And you would think that these two would be surefire hits on the main roster, but we've seen time and time again that that's not necessarily always the case here. Riddle or Lee, who do you think is going to have a better run on the main roster, and who would you prefer to see up on the main roster between the two?
Oh, I prefer Lee, like, 100 times more. Nothing against Riddle. I think that he's great, but he's not fine-tuned quite yet. He's one of the guys that I feel when I watch, like, okay, yeah, he can use some more work. He has the timing down that a wrestler should have. He has the energy and the charisma that a wrestler should have, but there's just something about his footwork that isn't solid. And that may be on purpose, you know, maybe part of his thing. But Keith Lee, on the other hand, Jesus, watching him is like watching an elephant do ballet. It's amazing.
We got to see Keith Lee kind of stand or foot tall at the end of tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, which does give me hope for Lee on the main roster. The main reason I think that Riddle is probably the more likely candidate is because they've been kind of teasing one-offs with Riddle, Lesnar, and Goldberg throughout the course of Riddle's quasi-NXT run, as well as his appearances on other WWE programming. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them eventually pull the trigger on Riddle as well.
I don't know. I think assuming that these people are going to be going to the main roster anytime soon is a little short-sighted. I don't think that's what they're going for. I mean, it's nice to speculate, and because you're Harry, that's what you're going to do. But this is very, very much a Survivor Series-only issue. We've seen this before. It's not going to matter next month.
No, I agree with that, but at the same time, it's kind of cool to imagine what these guys would be capable of on the main roster. Miz TV was supposed to have an interview with the new SmackDown heavyweight champion, The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, but since Wyatt was allegedly still in Saudi Arabia at this particular time, Miz is instead interrupted by arguably the best promo in NXT, Tommaso Ciampa. Words are exchanged, Daddy's apparently home, and Miz and Ciampa are going to get it on because them sound like fighting words.
Yeah, I really like this moment. Miz is Miz, and he's great. But one thing that I enjoyed was that Tommaso went for the same, you know, lines that everybody goes, and Miz called him out on it. So to Tommaso, that's news to him. He doesn't care what anybody else says. This is truly what he believes. But to the Miz, it's like, bro, come on. Everybody says this about me. Like, let's fucking fight then. And they do. And it was great. It was so simple, yet effective.
The finish seemed a little awkward. There were a couple of awkward moments here and there throughout the course of the match. I don't necessarily know that their timing was the greatest together. But in the end, Tommaso Ciampa picks up a victory over Miz with the fairy tale ending.
And again, you know, similar to Shayna and the end of the main event, you had the threat. You had them stand strong and tall on very specific people that others cared about. Like that, I don't know, that was so impactful. And then on the other token, you have Raw tonight with my favorite moments, you know, pull apart brawls and rosters coming down the ring.
Oh, I have something to say about one of those rosters coming down to the ring segments. Trust me. You're going to get pissed off, Harry, at something from Raw tonight. Just a tease for a little bit later on in the show. All right, let's move on here. They set up the Daniel Bryan-Adam Cole match here where it looks like they're going to try to tease Bryan and Shawn Michaels, but instead Triple H puts Cole into the match instead. Do you think that this is kind of a backhanded tease towards maybe Bryan and Michaels at WrestleMania, and is that a match you'd have any interest in seeing?
Damn, you're just full of fantasy wrestling tonight, aren't you? I would love to see HBK wrestle, and I'd love to see him wrestle a fucking mop, but I'm pretty sure Perry Saturn would have something to say about that. With any future match that's like a dream match, and I've felt this way for a very long time, any dream match is only as good as you build it. You can't just go off of the name because you still have to build around it. You can't just say this match is going to happen and then nothing happens until that match. So I don't fully trust that they're capable of creating a compelling story between Bryan and HBK at all. Although I did like the tease. I thought it was funny.
I thought it was a nice touch there because of the fact that Bryan and HBK have the history, and that history has been touched upon before on WWE television. If you recall, CM Punk had a line about Shawn Michaels in regards to Daniel Bryan of Shawn Michaels didn't train Daniel Bryan. Shawn Michaels took a check from Daniel Bryan. William Regal trained Daniel Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's meat on the bone there. And if HBK does want to erase the memories of that, whatever the fuck the name of the Saudi Arabia show that he worked was, I think it was Crown Jewel 2018, actually, that they had the tag match with Triple H and Shawn Michaels against Undertaker and Kane, then possibly a match with Bryan would be an excellent way to end his career on a high note once again, much the same way he did with the Undertaker match back at WrestleMania 25. All right. Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville are supposed to take on Carmella and Dana Brooke. Bianca Belair is shown backstage beating the hell out of Carmella and Dana Brooke. And instead of taking on Carmella and Dana, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville instead take on Rhea Ripley and Tegan Knox, where a Shiniest Wizard by Tegan, followed by the Condo Clutch, as I know it. I'm sure Rhea has an actual name for it, but I don't know what it is. It's an inverted clover leaf taps out Mandy Rose dead center of the ring for the NXT girls.
This was a little weird in execution. I don't know who allowed that to be an actual match. I didn't like that. Not that it was a big deal, but it just kind of didn't go with the narrative that was being displayed on the show. For them to have an actual match was weird. Who said, okay, yeah, go ahead and go out there and wrestle. And the attack in the back was weird only because Carmella was just sitting there, like, dazed and confused.
The assumption would be that she got attacked before the backstage segment picked up and then Bianca started handing Dana her ass.
Oh, yeah, of course, that's what it was. It still didn't come off all that well.
I agree. Stephanie McMahon cuts a promo talking about Natalya and Lacey at Crown Jewel. I hit the mute button because I don't care what Stephanie has to say.
I don't like that something is history-making and life-altering and world-shattering when it was a one-off thing, and I don't see any long-term effects of a women's match in Saudi Arabia. That didn't change anything. And seeing somebody from that country say, oh, my God, you know, the world is changing, but I don't buy that. Cute, but no.
Let's move to tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
All right. The main event, as we talked about earlier, is Seth Rollins taking on Adam Cole. There is an earlier segment in the show where Triple H is talking to Seth Rollins as Seth Rollins is apparently having a crisis of conscience. That's me attempting to use my literary knowledge. Where Triple H is telling Seth that any time that Seth has come to a crossroads in his career, Triple H has always been there for him in order to help him find his next thing, be it the NXT Championship, the launching of the Shield, the joining of the Authority, or what have you. Triple H then issues the ultimatum that you're either with NXT or you're against them, which sounds awfully familiar for people from that show. I've heard it somewhere before, and I just can't place where it was.
I don't know.
Times like this, I wish we had the We Walk Alone song from 12 Stones. Regardless, the Undisputed Era surround the ring. The OC and AJ Styles apparently make the save for Seth because that fucking makes sense. The OC and AJ Styles are then attacked by a group of different people from NXT that included Dominik Dijakovic, Punishment Martinez under his new name, Damian Priest. I think I saw Matt Riddle out there as well. I'm not sure. He may have been saved for the main event segment. The Undisputed Era is involved in the attack until Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins come running down and NXT fucking bails. May I have the floor here, Tony?
You go right ahead.
Curt Hawkins, Zack Ryder, R-Truth, Eric Rowan. Those are the people they sent out to defend Raw and chase away the Undisputed Era. R-Truth is a veteran. He has a little bit of sway. I think I'm willing to give R-Truth a little bit of a pass here. Eric Rowan is an intimidating motherfucker. Eric Rowan, I will give a pass here. But you're telling me that the six of you can't handle Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder when they've been treated like bitches on the main roster for the better part of the last 3 years? NXT as a whole is going to run from Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder. Get the fuck out of here. Tony, your thoughts on the Triple H Seth Rollins segment? And then aftermath thereof.
So, whereas SmackDown laid the foundation for something that could have been great, Raw just fucking, I don't want to say ruined it quite yet, but they took out all the energy that was originally there. There was no specificity. It was like any other invasion angle we've seen, literally any other one. And what it is people that aren't that big of a deal being beat up by people that aren't that big of a deal, because the people that are too big of a deal, I don't know if they want protected or, you know, they're incapable of being hurt.
Since when do you have a dog?
I've had a dog for years. I just don't like him. No, so the reality of the situation is simply that Raw, for whatever reason, either didn't have the same direction or planning that was necessary for SmackDown, because it was horrible. You talk about Ryder and Hawkins, and you talk about the R-Truth, and you want to give a pass to Rowan and a pass to Truth. I don't want to give a pass to them, because the question is still going to be there. Why would they care? Why would Eric Rowan give a damn about anything that's going on with Raw? Why would he have a loyalty to the Red Brand?
I can actually answer that. Rowan's trying to make his name for himself at NXT's expense. He wasn't necessarily doing it for Raw. He was doing it in order to try to establish footing on Raw.
Yeah, see, that's you doing their job again. That was not portrayed. That wasn't even implied. That's something that you're filling in
that's
a hole
true.
For, which is great, but it's not necessarily the truth, and it's not something that they're going to use in the future. I mean, short of him saying literally, like, you think I give a damn about Raw? I was here to make a name for myself. And then it's clear, oh, shit, that's great. That's awesome, because you answered the one question that was very apparent. Ryder and Hawkins, why would they care? Like, and the OC, why would they give a damn about Seth? Like them coming out was so awkward. It didn't make any sense, and it didn't feel right. And it's because that's not what you've led us to believe over these several months. AJ saying, I don't give a damn about the NXT. I like that. That just made sense. That's him saying, like, I don't give a shit about you guys. But if he didn't give a shit, then why did he come out? So I don't know. It was really messy tonight, and it didn't. Whereas, see, if the NXT people, they believe in their brand. So them coming out for the sake of just NXT, that makes sense. But for the other brands, it just doesn't really hold water. So it comes off as a little just not whole, not real. And when you have SmackDown, where it's a weak roster, they're not there, they're taking advantage of all these holes, it looks vicious. It looks well thought out. It looks mentally – it's cerebral assassin. They kept saying the game was the leader of all this. It made sense. And then you go to Raw, and it's just messy. There's people that don't matter. There's people fighting people that don't matter. There's nothing but high spots, you know, and you expect people to care about that. I just don't – it didn't work for me tonight at all. It's a huge step back.
What did you make of the main event match between Adam Cole and Seth Rollins here? Obviously not going to be as good as the Bryan match, because they didn't have nearly the time that they had to work with on SmackDown, nor did they have the ability to tell a clean finish like they did on SmackDown, where – Cole got to somewhat establish himself. Instead, we go to the disqualification finish here as the Undisputed Era gets involved to prevent the curb stomp. In the end, it leads to Team Raw once again making the save and going after the Undisputed Era, and then the rest of NXT coming through the crowd and getting involved in a big-ass brawl at the end of the show, topped off by Ricochet's Springboard Shooting Star Press and Keith Lee's Tope Con Hilo.
I mean, my issue is continuous through all of this. You know, when you look at SmackDown, you had specific players. Let me give you this. Let me give you this comparison. When Shayna Baszler interrupted Becky Lynch's interview, one could question, how did she know it was happening? Where is this happening and all that? But if you just look at it in the situation, I feel personally that that moment was badass, because that was specific to the situation. The overarching situation of, you know, Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT, but it was also very, very pinpointed on characters. Becky did not back down, and she had some nice little zingers in there, but Shayna also didn't back down. And the idea of making Bayley an afterthought, that is such in character for both of them. Now it's up to Bayley to be like, hey, bitches, I'm not just some chick you can keep an eye on. You know, she's got to make an impact. She's got to say something that's a little stronger than that. But the message was there, and the message was clear. It was Shayna saying, I'm NXT, and I'm going to beat both of your asses. Not just for my brand, but because I'm me. Just saying, like, what? I'm not Ronda Rousey, even that is like, oh, this bitch, okay. She's like, that's the homie. That's my friend. But guess what? That's not me. That, and then you compare that moment to everything else that happened on Raw. There was no poignancy. There was no specific moment where, like, Riddle went up to Brock Lesnar and said, you know, blah, 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 blah. not that it would have mattered, but it would have had some lasting impact, especially if he got the upper hand. And why couldn't Adam Cole have beaten Seth Rollins tonight? What would that have hurt at all?
I agree.
Seth ain't the champion. He's not going to sniff the belt anytime soon, so why not take that loss? Why not make this shit like, oh, man, NXT's something to mess with. Like, we should probably watch Survivor Series because this is going to be good.
Not to mention, you could have still done the post-match attack by the Undisputed Era even after Cole retains, because from a Triple H perspective, it could be, well, I guess we don't need him, so go ahead and finish him off, boys, before he can be a problem.
Right. This is like a dumb move, whereas Triple H is supposed to be this master maniacal planner that just demolished the SmackDown roster. He goes over to Raw. That didn't look planned at all. You had people randomly coming out of the crowd and then running. We didn't see anybody run on SmackDown. Nobody was afraid of anybody. You know, like, it wasn't – this isn't a group of little bitches. And why are they all of a sudden heels? You know, they're not heels. They're just trying to make a statement. But they're acting like the heel 101 of running whenever they feel the least bit threatened. So on Raw, just didn't work. And it didn't feel like a master plan. It didn't feel like this entire thing was thought out thoroughly to the point where Triple H once again overcame the odds. Even the Seth Rollins thing. When in this match did he decide, oh, okay, Undisputed Era could come out? When he was about to do the stomp? Like, I don't know, just poorly done.
They ran from Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder.
Yeah, they did.
Care to guess what my Greg Watry moment of the night was, Tony?
Oh, man. What?
Anyways, let's move on. The other thing that I wanted to talk about from tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw in more specific detail is the Brock Lesnar-Rey Mysterio thing. We kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, but I want to dive a little bit further into things here. First of all, Brock going crazy and threatening everybody to give up the location of Rey Mysterio is completely in character for Lesnar. And as long as Lesnar does as little talking as necessary and lets Heyman do the talking for him, I'm okay with Vicious wanting to beat everybody's ass Brock showing up. I have two specific things from tonight's build that I do want to talk about, though. One, I didn't realize Dio Madden was that big.
Mm-hmm.
He actually, he came off kind of badass standing up for Lawler like that.
Yeah, it was a good moment for him, and it may very well have saved him.
I'll be interested to see if they decide to put Madden back on commentary, if they're going to transition Madden into something of an in-ring performer as well, because I know he has in-ring experience down at NXT, but I don't know if it was ever the plan to have him wrestle on the main roster. I do feel like toe-to-toe-wise, size-wise, he stood up to Lesnar, and he did not look out of his sorts by doing so.
Yeah.
Second of all, we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, but I want to go into more specific detail here. What's your interest level in the Rey Mysterio, Brock Lesnar, WWE Championship match at Survivor Series? I almost said Universal out of habit.
I'm very interested. I think that this is more along the lines of a wrestling match and not a marquee match or a one-off. You know, like, we're getting away from the Kane thing and every Brock Lesnar match, you know, works out the same. I think that Brock and Rey, if you recall, have a pretty long-standing relationship, and I think Brock may be willing to wrestle here, so I'm kind of excited. If they make this a squash match, which I've read people expect, like if this isn't a squash match, blah, 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 it doesn't make sense. I don't want a squash match. I don't want Rey to win, but I also don't want a squash match. And I think this is one of those rare cases where you don't have to do that. So I'm really interested in it, actually. When I saw tonight that Rey challenged him for the Survivor Series, I was kind of pumped. I think that this has potential to be interesting and good. Great, I don't know, but good for sure. I know it's so small, but I have to mention it because it bugged the shit out of me. Brock is in the backstage area looking for Rey. Someone says he's in the car. This guy's in the car. Now, let's assume this guy's been in this car for the last 10 minutes, which is when Raw started. Is he aware of what's going on? Because I would assume that he's not aware. First of all, I don't know who he is, and why does he get a limo? What makes him so special? But he gets pulled out saying, I'm not Rey. Like, do you know how do you know that he's looking for Rey? And Brock's not stupid. That's not Rey. You know, not all Mexicans look the same. So I don't know. That just kind of took me out of the element.
Is it because that segment was racist towards Mexicans?
No, because I'm racist towards Mexicans all the time. I think if it was racist,
and
it'd be funnier.
And he says that as a Mexican, so he can get away with it. There's a George Lopez line there, though, of are you a Mexican or a Mexicant?
Mm-hmm.
I probably shouldn't be using that line. Anyway. Overall, what did you make of the performance from Lesnar selling the knee after the attack by Rey Mysterio with the pipe as well? Because I did want to kind of talk about that. I think that might be the most Brock has sold for anybody on the WWE roster.
Yeah,
which
that's
is sad in and of, kind
it.
Of sad in and of itself.
Yeah, it is, and I agree with you. Because, like, these people, yeah, they're indestructible and everything. And if you look at moments just on their own as that singular moment, then, okay, it's not that big of a deal. But when you look at everything else, like, all right, Seth Rollins gave him, like, 800 stomps and it wouldn't work, but Rey could beat him with a pipe. I like that he sold for him. I really do. But I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier. Like, these guys, you know, they've known each other for years, and they put on some matches back in the glory days of SmackDown where, you know. Man, were
yeah,
we doing the podcast? We weren't, huh? No, I think we were too
young. It just feels like we were doing that. It just feels like we were doing the podcast 15 years ago.
Yeah.
This podcast has aged both of us considerably.
Oh, yeah.
Bang, 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 bang. Try and stop it. Bang, bang. Here I come. Bang. Bang.
Sorry, finish your statement first. I hit the button.
Sorry, I just wonder if we would be like, just gaga every week if we had to review the SmackDown 6. Like, I don't even know if it'd be a podcast as much as it'd be a phone call conversation with me and you just saying, did you fucking see that?
I do believe the proper term would be audio fellatio.
Man, I would just cream over Eddie. Man. What a
I mean, I miss doing the... I miss doing the DVD review shows and stuff and getting to go back there because one of the shows we went back and reviewed was No Way Out 2005. Or not 2005, 2004, excuse me. The Eddie Guerrero-Brock Lesnar main event.
Yeah.
And, like even talking about it as a fan, I still got goosebumps some 10, 12 years later just talking about it as a fan, watching Eddie win the championship and the way that he celebrated. And the DVD version of the show, the No Way Out 2004 DVD version, actually has his post-match celebration as he comes through the curtain on it as a bonus feature. And, like, seeing him going up to Vince crying, it's just – it jerks at the heartstrings, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was great. That was No Way Out was – that was a February pay-per-view, I think, right? 'Cause
yes.
Just before Mania, yeah. Yeah, that was – oh, man, that was great.
And then Eddie proceeded to have another banger against Kurt at Mania that year. That would have been right before Mania 20.
Yep. With the boot.
All right, let's get into the quick hits for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. So we kind of talked about Charlotte and Natalya teaming up on Raw last week, Tony, between the two of us, and we both questioned as to why they would have them teaming up together, and then apparently they answered that question tonight because in non-title action, Charlotte and Natalya pick up a win over the women's tag team champions, the Kabuki Warriors, when Natalya tapped Kairi with the sharpshooter. See, this is the difference between NXT and the main. This is the difference between NXT and the main roster, though, because while this match went 18 minutes here, and the women's tag match on NXT went about the same length of time, Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai came off as much more viable contenders to the women's tag team titles than this one-off pairing of Charlotte and Natalya, did they not?
Not only that, but the match seemed more of a match than a showcase. That's the biggest distinction that I can make on any match that NXT has versus any match on the main roster. I think I talked about it last week where I felt like NXT, every match has a beginning, middle, and an end. Whereas on the main roster, you have a beginning, and it's like one of five beginnings, and you have an end. And there's nothing of note in the middle. There's nothing. Like, you don't know how often I'm typing out the match, and everything before the commercial break could legit not exist. Because everything that matters in the match is at the end. Whereas NXT, you're watching this, and everything matters. If you miss 20 seconds of a match, you may miss a pivotal moment where a limb gets hurt or where they're favoring a particular body part or where they accidentally run into the steps and now their shoulder is fucked for the rest of the match. You have to watch the whole thing. On Raw, you could fall asleep and still be fine as long as you watch that last hot sprint at the end of every match.
Women's tag team title match at Survivor Series, potentially? And do you care?
I mean, probably, but no. I don't care about Natty. I don't like Charlotte. So putting them together is not going to solve anything for me. Why? Like, why other than pedigree, other than their, you know, their fathers, there's no reason for these two to team up with one another. You can't bring Total Divas into it because it's, like, kind of non-canon. And there's not a forced teaming. There's not like an attack on the legends which caused them to have a like mind. There's not this eventual moment in the locker room where they meet each other and say, you want to wrestle tonight? Like, any one of those things could have happened. It's so easy and so juvenile, but it would have worked more than just putting them together randomly on one night and expecting us to go for it.
Charlotte even on Total Divas? I don't watch that.
I don't know. Probably not.
I think more importantly, I don't care either, regardless. Buddy Murphy and Cedric Alexander in a match that the crowd didn't care about until after the commercial break. Why? Because they've been trained not to care until after we come back from a commercial break. Murphy picks up another win, though, pinning Cedric Alexander with Murphy's Law. I like the fact that Buddy Murphy's getting an opportunity to shine here on Raw, and the wins over Cedric are helping him a little bit, but here's the problem for Murphy. What's next? What do you do with him? Your U.S. champion is a heel. Your heavyweight champion is Brock Lesnar, and Buddy Murphy ain't getting shit in on Brock Lesnar. Murphy's not a tag team guy anymore. He left his tag team partner behind in NXT. I like the fact that Murphy's getting screen time, but at the end of the day, what's the point for it?
These are two guys who, in order to make an impact, they need to wrestle someone who is already established. We've seen Buddy Murphy take on Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns, and he's come off pretty well. He's come off very, very like a star. We've seen Cedric chase the main event area. You know, we've seen both of them do well. But they're not at a point in their career where you can just throw both of them into a match and expect anyone to give a damn because they're still only as good as their opponents. And that's not a knock on them. I'm saying character-wise, they're not fleshed out enough. They're not fleshed out enough to be standalone. So it's like creating a conflict on episode one of a new TV show when you really don't know either one of these people. You know, that's all that tonight was. It's unfortunate because, yeah, people are like, well, I don't really particularly care. I care that Roman Reigns thinks Buddy Murphy tried to kill him, you know, so that makes sense. So let's see him defend himself. I care that Cedric is a, you know, never say die dude who wants to fight AJ Styles, and then you get two great matches out of that. But when you put Buddy versus Cedric, who, yes, by every definition should have a great match, there's not enough meat on the bone there to even be wanting to bite into it.
I know I always say that I watch wrestling for the actual in-ring content here, but I do think that there is a level of credibility to people who say that there has to have something to have you emotionally invested in a match, and it becomes glaringly obvious in a situation like this here. If you were to have two different people where there's an emotional tie-in in the match and it's not just them wrestling for the sake of wrestling, then I think that you would have a better crowd reaction, like you did with the Murphy versus Bryan match or the Murphy versus Reigns match, like you did with Cedric versus McIntyre back when Cedric was trying to establish himself, or Cedric versus Styles for the U.S. title. Like you said, there's not enough proverbial meat on the bone for these two as a singles match against each other to create enough of an interest from the fans in attendance that think that anything more that this is a popcorn match. Speaking of popcorn matches... Oh, go ahead, Tony.
No, like, I mean, popcorn match, this is like a bathroom match. And it sucks because they're both great and they both deserve more. It's not their fault. There's nothing that they're doing wrong here.
Speaking of popcorn matches, Tony, mixed tag team action as Zelina Vega and Andrade take on Sin Cara and Catalina. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Sure. Let me be candid here real quick, Harry. If you look at the Raw report on 411mania.com, you'll notice a match missing. I knocked the fuck out before this match even started. And that's hard to do considering how hot Zelina looked. But yeah, I knocked out. I woke up, like, I don't know, about near the end. But yeah, that's how little interest I have in this particular program.
Okay, let me ask the more important question. Did anybody in the comment section notice?
No one noticed, and no one cared.
Well, that's unfortunate for Zelina and Andrade. This Catalina chick is basically dead in the water, and she just started on the main roster. No one fucking cares that you're allied with Sin Cara. You know the people who care about Sin Cara are his family. That's about it. And even most of them are indifferent towards him. Fuck you, Hulk.
Yeah. They didn't even invite Lucha. They didn't even invite him to the Lucha House Party.
Actually, he was injured when Lucha House Party was created, and the rumor was that he stayed away in order to avoid Lucha House Party. Again, rumor and innuendo. Mm. All right, so Rusev is supposed to take on Bob Lashley. Yes, I said Bob because that's what Rusev called him. And Lashley tore his groin, fucking Lana. But Lana left Rusev because Rusev wanted was sex.
Exactly. But the new foil
in
this whole program is the fact that Rusev wants Lashley's ass. So now I'm just really confused.
Well, they did say they were going to come up with more glad-friendly storylines, Tony.
And if we didn't have enough male testosterone in this little play known as Lana versus Rusev, let's bring Drew McIntyre into this whole thing.
I don't think Liz would have been able to contain herself on tonight's show with Rusev and Drew McIntyre in the same ring. I honestly don't. I feel like it's probably for the best that Liz is sick right now, because neither of us would have gotten a word in edgewise.
This program needs to die already.
On a related note, Bob Lashley.
Take the fish.
That's also what the person who wrote this program can do. Rusev and McIntyre, match was actually surprisingly pretty decent. I thought they worked pretty well together here. I like the fact that when McIntyre called Rusev a bitch, he fired up here. But in the end, Lashley uses this as yet another advantage to get an advantage on Rusev, attacking Rusev with the crutch when we all knew that Lashley wasn't injured. McIntyre seemed kind of okay with Lashley costing him a match by disqualification, which I thought was out of character for Drew.
There's a lot of out of character for Drew. I know that they've teamed up before, Lashley and Drew. I know there's a little bit of a friendship there. But the Drew McIntyre that we know has literally gone out there and said, I'm tired of wrestlers not caring about wrestling. I'm tired of everyone in the back not giving their all, putting everything into becoming the best wrestler. Now, of course, that's not word for word, but that's the character that we were given when he came back. Why would he even touch this? Why would we even be involved? I can just picture Drew saying, like, no, I'm not even – no, fight your own battle. What the fuck? Like, I'm on a quest to be the best wrestler, and why would I take part in this?
The only reason that I could think Just real quick, the only reason that I would think that McIntyre would want to get involved in this, and once again, this is me writing their storyline for them, is the fact that McIntyre realizes that Rusev is so woebegotten over losing Lana that he's not focusing on his wrestling career.
Yeah, well, and if that's a stretch, but that even that could be proven
better
with just a fucking a little small promo. Like, you got your head so far up your ass, you're a wrestler, look at you, you're puny, you're weak, you're pathetic. Losing your edge over a woman, you know? And then Rusev could bring up the fact that Drew got his ass beat by his ex, you know? It would be great. It'd be great storytelling. But of course,
God damn it, Tony.
They're sticking with what they got.
I'm just saying that Taryn Terrell passes the hot, crazy scale, bro.
Oh, for sure. Vicky Mendoza line, for sure.
She Barney Stinson the fuck out of that scale.
Mm-hmm.
Rusev starts to gain an advantage on Lashley once again when Randy Orton strikes with an RKO. Why is Randy Orton helping Bobby Lashley here? No one fucking knows. Ricochet comes to Rusev's aid in order to chase off Orton. Why? No one fucking knows. The grand scheme of things is it's probably going to end up in a Teddy Long special next week, Tony. We're going to have a tag match, playa. Tony's completely no-selling that. Okay, then. Moving on. The Becky Baszler segment is here. I agree with you 100%. I thought this came off really well. Shayna looked like a star and more than held her own with the hottest woman in the division right now. And I would argue that something like this is exactly what you needed to do with a Shayna Baszler here who would be so unfamiliar to the main roster fans, because most of the main roster fans don't watch NXT if you compare the relative viewership numbers.
Yeah, I thought this segment was great.
Six-man tag team action as the OC teams with Humberto Carrillo. Again, these names that I can't, or excuse me, the Street Profits team with Humberto Carrillo to take on the OC in its entirety of Styles, Gallows, and Anderson here. Why would Styles care about Carrillo again? Hasn't he beaten him twice in the last 6 days? What's the fucking point? Regardless. And again, Styles beats Carrillo, this time using the ropes to do so. I think they're slow burning Carrillo towards a contendership for the U.S. title. They're just going about as ass backwards as possible in order to do so. Because this is three times that Carrillo and Styles have shared a ring, and three times that Carrillo's shoulders have been on the canvas for the three count.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose on the plus side, at least champions not losing a non-title match like your women's tag team champions did. You know what we love more than pull apart roster brawls, Tony? Tag team champions in squash matches.
And I didn't even give that time of day. I said the Viking Raiders won a squash match, and I moved on.
Is that all we're going to do here in the quick hit section? I'm okay with that. Okay, the Viking Raiders won a squash match, and we moved on. Well, actually, we don't, because the next segment's the main event, and we've already discussed that in detail. Thus wrapping up tonight's episode of Raw, and thus taking us to the final reaction for both Raw and SmackDown. All right, Tony, between the two shows, favorite match or moment?
I got to say the main event of SmackDown.
I mean, there's no arguing here. Cole and Daniel Bryan went out there, had 25 minutes, and tore it up. I think that match right there kind of gives me some hope for a guy like Cole on the main roster, because he's not the typical body frame of a main event level star that you would see, but neither is Bryan. So seeing them face each other in the main event of a show and having the crowd as invested into the match as they were, and having them given as much time to tell the story as they were, and having the different the different mechanics, the different ways that they went about telling the story that they were telling inside of that match. Machinations, I believe, is pronunciation there. regardless, the point being is that they went out there and they absolutely killed it with the time that they were given in order to fill what was taken away from SmackDown because of the plane issues. Greg Watry, Tony.
I want to say everything to do with NXT tonight, but I feel like that's an easy way. So I'll go with just more Lashley Lana Rusev stuff. I mean, when your character says it himself, I know everyone wants this to be over just like I do. You're kind of like well aware, and that just makes me even more upset.
They ran from Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder. That's straight up Greg Watry shit if I've ever seen it. Show rating for SmackDown.
8 out of 10.
Show rating for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw.
4 out of 10.
See, I'm not nearly as hard as you were on Raw tonight. I gave SmackDown an 8.5. I really enjoyed SmackDown top to bottom. I thought that everything that they did on SmackDown told an excellent story. And like you were saying, they definitely had a lot of subtlety involved on SmackDown. I think there was enough good stuff on tonight's episode of Raw for me to care about the show in terms of the in-ring content that I don't feel like it dragged as much as it usually does. I'm going to give it a 6. It wasn't a great show. It wasn't nearly as good as SmackDown was. But by traditional Raw standards, especially recently, it was a step in the right direction, and the build towards Survivor Series at least has me entertained. Who's your MVP for the week, Tony?
I'm going to say Shayna. I don't like her. I don't like the dominance that I've seen for so long, but I like that I don't like her. And this whole idea of being awesome, being great, being really, really good, and knowing you're in the minor leagues is something that should be able to carry this program forward. And I think she did really well, both on SmackDown and on Raw, whereas everybody else did great on SmackDown and then just kind of faltered away on Raw.
But based on the value of his performances, I think my MVP has to go to...
Yeah, I get that.
Specifically, the match with Bryan was a star-making performance with the WWE Universe. Because when you consider that a max-out NXT audience on USA Network has been like 1.2 million people, almost 2.6 million people saw SmackDown on Fox this past Friday night, which is the largest audience that Cole has had in the WWE watching him, and he more than delivered on his largest platform to date. And then followed it up with another very good match against Seth Rollins tonight on Raw, despite the bullshit finish. Obviously, Raw and SmackDown are coming calling to Full Sail on Wednesday, Tony. Do you have the NXT coverage on 411 again?
No, I think I'm back to, you know, regular schedule, so I'll be watching, but I won't be recapping.
Because I believe Robert Winfrey is doing NXT normally on 411, correct?
I have no idea who did it before. I just know that the World Series was a big deal to them, so they couldn't cover NXT.
What are your thoughts on the Washington Nationals winning the World Series?
My bar lost a lot of money when the Dodgers were eliminated, so after that, I didn't care.
Baseball fans are a bunch of drunks, huh?
Yeah, but they spend money, so it's okay.
Well, sorry, Dodgers. See ya, wouldn't want to be ya. My team went out in the first round of the playoffs, too, so I have no sympathy for the Dodgers. I think that wraps us up, Tony, in just over an hour.
Nice.
Not bad. Not bad at all. for the down since day one co-host, Tony Acero, and the absent co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi. I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to The Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. We'll be back at you guys again next Monday night, same time, 11:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 Tony time, where we continue the build towards Survivor Series, Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT. Will it still matter? We'll see. Send us home, Tony.
Deuces, bitches.
You have been listening to The Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Liz Puglisi bring you The Reaction, your coverage of both Raw and SmackDown here on the Chair Shot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.